It was gull-winged now, built like a glider. The edges of the crazy arrowhead had sprouted a bewildering variety of wings and flaps. "That was quite a ride," Horvath said jovially as he came to join them. "The whole vehicle changes shape. There aren't any hinges on the wings. The flaps come out as if they were alive. The jet scoops open and closes like mouths. You really should have seen it. If Commander Sinclair ever comes down, we'll have to give him the window seat," he chortled. He did not notice the glares. An inflated airlock opened at the far end of the building, and three brown-and-white motis entered. Fear rose in Barry's throat again as they separated, one joining each of the Navy ratings, while the other came directly to Barry. "Fionch," it said. Barry's mouth was very dry. "Don't be afraid," said the moti. "I can't read your mind." It was definitely the wrong thing to say if the moti wanted Barry at ease. "I'm told that is your profession." The moti laughed. "It's my profession, but I can't do it. All I will ever know is what you show me." It didn't sound at all as Barry sounded to himself. It must have studied humans in general. Only that. "You're male," he noticed. "I am young. The others were female by the time they reached MacArthur. Mr. Barry, we have vehicles outside and a place of residence for you nearby. Come and see our city, and then we can discuss business." It took his arm in two small right arms, and the touch was very strange. Barry let himself be led to the airlock. "Don't be afraid. I can't read your mind," it had said, reading his mind. On many rediscovered worlds of the First Empire, there were rumors of mind-readers, but none had ever been found, praise the mercy of Allah. This thing claimed that it was not, and it was very alien. The touch was not abhorrent, although people of Barry's culture hated to be touched. He had been among far too many strange customs and peoples to worry about his childhood prejudices. But this moti was reassuringly strange, and Barry had never heard of anybody's fionch acting that way. Was it trying to reassure him? Nothing could have lured him but the hope of profit. Profit without ceiling, without limit. Profit from merely looking around. Even the terraforming of the New Caledonia worlds by the First Empire had not shown the industrial power that must have moved the asteroids to Mote Beta's Trojan points. "A good commercial product," the moti was saying, "should not be bulky or massive. We should be able to find items scarce here and plentiful in the Empire, or vice versa. I anticipate great profit from your visit." They joined the others in the airlock. Large windows showed the airfield. "Blasted show-offs," Renner muttered to Barry. When the trader looked at him quizzically, Renner pointed. "There's city all around, and the airport's got not 1 meter of extra space." Barry nodded. Around the tiny field were skyscrapers, tall and square-built, jammed close together, with only a single belt of green running out of the city to the east. If there were a plane crash, it would be a disaster. But the motis didn't build planes to crash. There were 3 ground cars, limousines, 2 for passengers and 1 for luggage, and the human seats took up 2/3 of the room in each. Barry nodded reflectively. Motis didn't mind being crowded together. As soon as they took their seats, the drivers, who were browns, whipped the cars away. The vehicles ran soundlessly, with a smooth feeling of power, and there was no jolt at all. The motors were in the hubs of the tall balloon tires, much like those of cars on Empire worlds. Tall, ugly buildings loomed above them to shoulder out the sky. The black streets were wide, but very crowded, and the motis drove like maniacs. Tiny vehicles passed each other in intricate curved paths, with centimeters of clearance. The traffic was not quite silent. There was a steady, low hum that might have been all the hundreds of motors sounding together, and sometimes a stream of high-pitched gibberish that might have been cursing. Once the humans were able to stop wincing away from each potential collision, they noticed that all the other drivers were browns, too. Most of the cars carried a passenger, sometimes a brown and white, often a pure white. These whites were larger than the brown and whites, and their fur was very clean and silky, and they were doing all the cursing as their drivers continued in silence. Science Minister Horvath turned back to the humans in the seats behind him.
"I had a look at the buildings as we came down. Roof gardens on every one of them."
"Well, Mr. Renner, are you glad you came? We were expecting a Navy officer, but hardly you."
"It seemed most reasonable to send me," Kevin Renner said. "I was the most thoroughly available officer aboard, as the captain put it. I won't be needed to chart courses for a while."
"And that's why they sent you?" Sally asked.
"No, I think what really convinced the captain was the way I screamed and cried and threatened to hold my breath. Somehow he got the idea I really wanted to come, and I did." The way the navigating officer leaned forward in his seat reminded Sally of a dog sticking its head out of a car window into the wind. They had only just noticed the walkways that ran one floor up along the edges of the buildings, and they could not see the pedestrians well at all. There were more whites, and brown and whites, and others. Something tall and symmetrical came walking like a giant among the whites. 3 meters tall, it must have been, with a small, earless head that seemed submerged beneath the sloping muscles of the shoulders. It carried a massive-looking box of some kind under each of 2 arms. It walked like a juggernaut, steady and unstoppable.
"What's that?" Renner asked.
"Worker," Sally's Moti replied. "Porter. Not very intelligent." There was something else Renner strained to see, for its fur was rust red, as if it had been dipped in blood. It was the size of his own Moti, but with a smaller head, and as it raised and flexed its right hands, it showed fingers so long and delicate that Renner thought of Amazon spiders. He touched his Fjunsch's shoulder and pointed.
"And that?"
"Physician, M.D., Renner's Moti said. "We're a differentiated species, as you may have gathered by now. They're all relatives, so to speak."
"Yeah.
And the whites?"
"Givers of orders. There was one aboard ship, as I'm sure you know."
"Yeah, we guessed that. The Tsar had, anyway. What else was he right about?"
"What do you think of our architecture?"
"Ugly. Industrial, hideous," said Renner. "I knew your ideas of beauty would be different from ours, but on your honor, do you have a standard of beauty?"
"Come, I will conceal nothing from you." "We do, but it doesn't resemble yours, and I still don't know what you people see in arches and pillars."
"Freudian symbolism," Renner said firmly. Sally snorted.
"That's what Horvath's Moti keeps saying, but I've never heard a coherent explanation," Renner's Moti said. "Meanwhile, what do you think of your vehicles?"
The limousines were radically different from the 2-seaters that zipped past them. No 2 of the 2-seaters were alike either. The Motis did not seem to have discovered the advantages of standardization. But all the other vehicles they had seen were tiny, like a pair of motorcycles, while the humans rode in low-slung, streamlined vehicles with soft curves, bright with polish.
"They're beautiful," said Sally. "Did you design them just for us?"
"Yes," Hermoti replied.
"Did we guess well?"
"Perfectly. We're most flattered," Sally said. "You must have put considerable expense into this."
She trailed off. Renner turned to see where she was looking and gasped. There had been castles like this in the Tyrolean Alps of Earth. They were still there, never bombed, but Renner had only seen copies on other worlds. Now a fairy tale castle, graceful with tall spires, stood among the square buildings of the Moti City. At one corner, a reaching minaret was circled by a thin balcony.
"What is that place?" Renner asked.
Sally's Moti answered.
"You will stay there. It is pressurized and self-enclosed, with a garage and cars for your convenience."
Horace Berry spoke into the admiring silence.
"You are most impressive hosts."
From the first, they called it the castle. Beyond question, it had been designed and built entirely for them. It was large enough for perhaps 30 people. Its beauty and luxury were in the tradition of Sparta, with a few jarring notes. Whitbread, Staley, Sally, Doctors Hardy and Horvath, they knew their manners. They kept firm rein on their laughter as their fjunch-ps showed them about their respective rooms. Able spacers Jackson and Weiss were awed to silence, and wary of saying something foolish. Horace Berry's people had rigid traditions of hospitality. Aside from that, he found all customs strange except on Levant. But Renner's people respected candor, and candor, he had found, made life easier for everyone. Except in the Navy. In the Navy, he had learned to keep his mouth shut. Fortunately, his fjunch held views similar to his own. He looked about the apartment assigned him. Double bed, dresser, large closet, a couch and coffee table, all vaguely reminiscent of the travelogues he had shown the Motis. It was 5 times the size of his cabin aboard MacArthur. "Elbow room," he said with great satisfaction. He sniffed. There was no smell at all. "You do a great job of filtering the planet's air." "Thanks. As for the elbow room," Renner's Moti wiggled all her elbows, "we should need more than you, but we don't." The picture window ran from floor to ceiling, wall to wall. The city towered over him. Most of the buildings in view were taller than the castle. Renner found that he was looking straight down a city street toward a magnificent sunset that was all the shades of red. The pedestrian level showed a hurrying horde of colored blobs, mostly reds and browns, but also many whites. He watched for a time, then turned back. There was an alcove near the head of his bed. He looked into it. It held a dresser and 2 odd-looking pieces of furniture that Renner recognized. They resembled what the brown had done to the bed in Crawford's stateroom. He asked, "Two? We will be assigned a brown. I'm going to teach you a new word. It's called privacy. It refers to the human need. We know about privacy." The Moti did a double take. "You aren't suggesting it should apply between a man and his fjunch?" Renner nodded solemnly. But, Renner, do you have any respect for tradition?"
"Do I?"
"No. Damn it. All right, Renner. We'll sling a door there. With a lock?" "Yeah. I might add that the rest probably feel the same way, whether they say so or not." The bed, the couch, the table showed none of the familiar Moti innovations. The mattress was a bit too firm, but what the hell? Renner glanced into the bathroom and burst out laughing. The toilet was a freefall toilet, somewhat changed from those in the cutter. It had a gold flush carved into the semblance of a dog's head. The bathtub was strange.
"I've got to try that bathtub," said Renner.
"Let me know what you think. We saw some pictures of bathtubs in your travelogues, but they looked ridiculous, given your anatomy."
"Right. Nobody's ever designed a decent bathtub."
"There weren't any toilets in those pictures, were there?"
"Oddly enough, there weren't."
Renner began sketching. When he had finished, his Moti said, "Just how much water do these use?"
"Quite a lot. Too much for spacecraft."
"Well, we'll see what we can do."
"Oh, and you'd better hang another door between the bathroom and the living room."
"More privacy?"
"Yeah."
Dinner that night was like a formal dinner in Sally's old home on Sparta, but weirdly changed. The servants, silent, attentive, deferential, guided by the host who in deference to rank was Dr. Horvath's Moti, were laborers, 1.5 meters tall. The food was from MacArthur's stores, except for an appetizer, which was a melon-like fruit sweetened with a yellow sauce. "We guarantee it non-poisonous," said Renner's Moti. "We've found a few foods we can guarantee, and we're looking for more. But you'll have to take your chances on the taste." The sauce killed the melon's sour taste and made it delicious.
"We can use this as a trade item," said Berry. We would rather ship the seeds, not the melon itself. Is it hard to grow?
Not at all, but it requires cultivation, said Berries Moti. We'll give you the opportunity to test the soil. Have you found other things that might be worth trading?
Berry frowned and looked down at his plate.
Nobody had remarked on those plates. They were gold, plates, silverware, even the wine goblets, though they were shaped like fine crystal. Yet they couldn't be gold, because they didn't conduct heat, and they were simple copies of the plastic freefall utensils aboard MacArthur's cutter, even to the trademarks stamped on the edges.
Everyone was waiting for his answer. Trade possibilities would profoundly affect the relationship between Moat and Empire.
On our route to the castle, I looked for signs of luxuries among you. I saw none but those designed specifically for human beings. Perhaps I did not recognize them.
I know the word, but we deal very little in luxuries. I speak for the givers of orders, of course, we put more emphasis on power, territory, the maintenance of a household and a dynasty. We concern ourselves with providing a proper station in life for our children.
Berry filed the information. We speak for the givers of orders. He was dealing with a servant. No, an agent. He must keep that in mind and wonder how binding were his Fionch's promises. He smiled and said,
A pity. Luxuries travel well. You will understand my problem in finding trade goods when I tell you that it would hardly be profitable to buy gold from you.
I thought as much. We must see if we can find something more valuable.
Works of art, perhaps?
Art? Let me, said Renner's Moti. She switched to a high-pitched, warbling language, talked very fast for perhaps 20 seconds, then looked about at the assembled company.
Sorry, but it was quicker that way.
Berries Moti said,
Quite so. I take it you would want the originals?
If possible.
Of course. To us, a copy is as good as the original. We have many museums. I'll arrange some tours.
It developed that everyone wanted to go along. When they returned from dinner, Whitbread almost laughed when he saw there was now a door on the bathroom. His Moti caught it and said,
Mr. Renner had words to say about privacy.
She jerked a thumb at the door that now closed off her alcove.
Oh, that one wasn't necessary, said Whitbread. He was not used to sleeping alone. If he woke in the middle of the night, who would he talk to until he fell asleep again?
Someone knocked on the door. Abel Spacer Weiss from Tabletop, Whitbread recalled.
Sir, may I speak with you privately?
Right, said Whitbread's Moti, and she withdrew to the alcove. The Motis had caught on to privacy fast.
Whitbread ushered Weiss into the room.
Sir, we've got sort of a problem, Weiss said. Me and Jackson, that is. We came down to help out, you know, carrying luggage and cleaning up and like that.
Right? You won't be doing any of that. We've each been assigned an engineer type.
Yes, sir, but it's more than that. Jackson and me, we've been assigned a brown each, too, and
Fionch...
Right.
Well, there are certain things you can't talk about.
Both ratings were stationed in hangar deck and wouldn't know much about field technology anyway.
Yes, sir, we know that. No war stories, nothing about ship's weapons or drive.
All right. Aside from that, you're on vacation. You're traveling first class with a servant and a native guide. Enjoy it. Don't say anything the Tsar would hang you for. Don't bother to ask about the local red light district. And don't worry about the expense. Have a ball, and hope they don't send you up on the next boat.
Aye, aye, sir. Weiss grinned suddenly. You know, this is why I joined the Navy. Strange worlds. This is what the enlistment men promised us.
Golden cities far...
Me too.
Afterwards, Whitbread stood by the picture window. The city glowed with a million lights. Most of the tiny cars had disappeared, but the streets were alive with huge, silent trucks. The pedestrians had slacked off somewhat. Whitbread spotted something tall and spindly that ran among the whites, as if they were stationary objects.
It dodged around a huge porter type and was gone. 27. The Guided Tour. Renner was up before dawn. The Motis chose and set out clothing for him while he was bathing in the remarkable tub. He let their choice stand. He would indulge them. They might be the last non-military servants he would ever have. His sidearm was discreetly laid out with his clothing, and after a lot of thought, Renner buckled it under a civilian jacket woven from some marvelous shining fibers. He didn't want the weapon, but regulations were regulations. The others were all at breakfast, watching the dawn through the big picture window. It came on like sunset, in all the shades of red. Mote Prime's day was a few hours too long. At night, they would stay up longer. They would sleep longer in the mornings, and still be up at dawn. Breakfast featured large, remarkably egg-shaped boiled eggs. Inside the shell, it was as if the egg came pre-scrambled, with a maraschino cherry buried off-center. Renner was told that the cherry thing was not worth eating, and he didn't try. "The museum is only a few blocks from here." Dr. Horvath's Moti rubbed her right hands briskly together. "Let's walk. You'll want warm clothes, I think." The Motis all had that problem. Which pair of hands to use to imitate human gestures? Renner expected Jackson's Moti to go psychotic. Jackson was left-handed. They walked. A cold breeze whipped them from around corners. The sun was big and dim. You could look directly at it this early in the day. Tiny cars swarmed 6 feet below them. The smell of Mote Prime air seeped faintly through the filter helmets, and so did the quiet hum of cars and the fast jabber of Moti voices. The group of humans moved among crowds of Motis of all colors, and were ignored. Then a group of white-furred pedestrians turned a corner and lingered to examine them. They chattered in musical tones and stared curiously. Barry seemed uncomfortable. He stayed within the group as much as he could. "He doesn't want eye tracks all over him," Renner decided. The sailing master found himself being examined by a very pregnant white, the bulge of her child high up above the complexities of the major joint in her back. Renner smiled at her, squatted on his heels, and turned his back to her. His fjunch sang in low tones, and the white moved closer. Then half a dozen white Motis were running a dozen small hands over his vertebrae. "Right, a little lower," said Renner. "Okay, scratch right there. Ah." When the whites had moved on, Renner stretched his long legs to catch up with the tour. His Moti trotted alongside. "I trust I will not learn your irreverence," his fjunch said.
"Why not?" Renner asked seriously.
"When you are gone, there will be other work for us. No, do not be alarmed. If you are capable of satisfying the Navy, I can have no more trouble keeping the givers of orders happy." There was an almost wistful tone, Renner thought, but he wasn't sure. If Motis had facial expressions, Renner hadn't learned them. The museum was a good distance ahead of them. Like other buildings, it was square-built, but its face was glass, or something like it.
"We have many places that fit your word museum," Horvath's Moti was saying, "in this and other cities. This one was closest and specializes in painting and sculpture."
A juggernaut loomed over them, 3 meters tall, and another meter beyond that because of the cargo on its head. She, Renner noted from the long, shallow bulge of pregnancy high on her abdomen. The eyes were soft animal eyes, without awareness, and she caught up with them and passed, never slowing.
"Carrying a child doesn't seem to slow a Moti down," Renner observed.
Brown and white shoulders and heads turned toward him. Renner's Moti said,
"No, of course not. Why should it?"
Sally Fowler took up the task. She tried carefully to explain just how useless pregnant human females were. "It's one reason we tend to develop male-oriented societies, and—" She was still lecturing on childbirth problems when they reached the museum. The doorway would have caught Renner across the bridge of his nose. The ceilings were higher. They brushed his hair. Dr. Horvath had to bend his head. And the lighting was a bit too yellow. And the paintings were placed too low. Conditions for viewing were not ideal. Aside from that, the colors in the paints themselves were off. Dr. Horvath and his Modi conversed with animation following his revelation that blue plus yellow equals green to a human eye. The Moti eye was designed like a human eye, or an octopus eye for that matter. A globe, an adaptable lens, receptor nerves along the back. But the receptors were different. Yet the paintings had impact. In the main hall, which had 3-meter ceilings and was lined with larger paintings, the tour stopped before a street scene. Here, a brown and white had climbed on a car and was apparently haranguing a swarm of browns and brown and whites, while behind him the sky burned sunset red. The expressions were all the same flat smile, but Renner sensed violence and looked closer. Many of the crowd carried tools, always in their left hands, and some were broken. The city itself was on fire.
It's called Return to Your Tasks. You'll find that the Crazy Eddie theme recurs constantly, said Sally's Moti. She moved on before she could be asked to explain further.
The next painting in line showed a quasi Moti, tall and thin, small-headed, long-legged. It was running out of a forest at the viewer. Its breath trailed smoky white behind it. The message carrier, Hardy's Moti called it. The next was another outdoor scene, a score of browns and whites eating around a blazing campfire. Animal eyes gleamed red around them. The whole landscape was dark red, and overhead, Murkison's eye gleamed against the coal sack.
You can't tell what they're thinking and feeling from looking at them, can you?
We were afraid of that, said Horvath's Moti.
Nonverbal communication. The signals are different with us.
I suppose so, said Barry. These paintings would all be saleable, but none especially so. They would be only curiosities, though quite valuable as such, because of the huge potential market and the limited source, but they do not communicate. Who painted them?
This one is quite old. You can see that it was painted on the wall of the building itself, and...
But what kind of Moti? Brown and whites?
There was impolite laughter among the Motis. Barry's Moti said, You will never see a work of art that was not made by a brown and white. Communication is our specialty. Art is communication.
Does a white never have anything to say?
Of course. He has a mediator say it for him. We translate, we communicate. Many of these paintings are arguments, visually expressed.
Weiss had been trailing along, saying nothing, Renner noticed. Keeping his voice down, he asked the man,
Any comments?
Weiss scratched his jaw.
Sir, I haven't been in a museum since grade school, but aren't some paintings made just to be pretty?
There were only 2 portraits in all the halls of paintings. Brown and whites both. They both showed from the waist up. Expression in the motis must show in body language, not faces. These portraits were oddly lighted, and their arms were oddly distorted. Renner thought them evil.
Evil? No, said Renner's Moti.
That one caused the Crazy Eddie probe to be built, and this was the designer of a universal language long ago.
Is it still used?
After a fashion, but it fragmented, of course. Languages do that. Sinclair and Potter and Barry don't speak the same language you do. Sometimes the sounds are similar, but the nonverbal signals are very different.
Renner caught up with Weiss as they were about to enter the Hall of Sculpture.
You were right. In the Empire, there are paintings that are just supposed to be pretty. Here, no. Did you notice the difference?
No landscape without Modi's doing something in it. Almost no portraits. And those 2 were slanted pictures. In fact, everything's slanted.
He turned to appeal to his Moti.
Right? Those pictures you pointed out, done before your civilization invented the camera, they weren't straight representations.
Renner, do you know how much work goes into a painting?
I've never tried. I can guess.
Then can you imagine anyone going to that much trouble if he doesn't have something to say?
How about mountains are pretty? Weiss suggested.
Renner's Moti shrugged.